All right, I'm not sure if we're still live here or not, but there's commercials there, and well, check out our sponsors. And folks, if we can just get our flow here, James, we'll be able to get into some of these stories that you have planned to talk about. We usually have a few stories that are on one of James' various websites. Okay, just got word here. James, we're gonna have a special tonight, buddy.
Holy moly.
Cool. All right, let's see here. Just got word from the staff. Cool. Okay. Good to go. Cool.
So we don't interrupt this broadcast anymore.
No, we're gonna go commercial free. That's pretty cool. That's something that you and I have not done before. It's something you get a chance to do with James and some other things that you put together. But yeah, it's always good, and it gives it more of that podcast feel, if you will, where
I
you
think
don't have
so.
To be interrupted.
I think so. So
All right.
to take it back to the top, and as I said, it was kind of appropriate, I suppose, our technical difficulties in a way relate to the interruption of live radio and television. So the story is, and we're now under a week away from the November 9th presidential emergency alert tests, the FCC and FEMA and all the other cadres running a multi-level national emergency broadcast system on November 9th. We reported this story, and I had it on Media Monarchy way back in February when it was first announced, and James and I did go over this story on New World Next Week back in February. So my posting from February 7th, 2011, FCC announces nationwide presidential emergency alerts to be tested. The FCC made it official. It released an order that requires participants in the emergency alert system, namely broadcasters, cable operators, and certain satellite providers, to participate in the first ever national test of the emergency alert system. The test will differ starkly from the monthly EAS test the public knows so well. In this case, the White House will actually activate the test as if the president wanted to take over the airwaves to address the nation. Although EAS-type capabilities have existed since the early 50s, no president has ever used it. And now we're going to find out how well it actually works. So that's a story from emergencymgmt.com, again, from back in February.
James, what's your take on this? There's the crowd of people out there that believe there are some sort of astronomical, catastrophic event on the horizon, whether it's Nibiru, Planet X, whatever you want to call it, or it's just possible Earth changes. And then there's others that feel that there might be some sort of false flag or a collapse of our economy, whatever it may be, a canceling of the elections. Perhaps this is Project Bluebeam, a good time for us to get disclosure if you want to go down that road. What's your take, James?
That's the thing. There are so many angles, and I think that's what gives me so many kind of mixed feelings about all of it. I guess, or at least to my knowledge, we all started to pay attention to the drills, to the military, you know, war games and exercises that started to involve, you know, the private military contractors and all the kind of shady third-party firms. We started to follow all of that after 9/11, when we discovered that there were all of these drills going on of the exact same things happening in the exact same times laid out in the scenario. And then we saw it again on 7/7/2005 in London. And we've seen it in several scenarios, many, many scenarios, where if it doesn't mirror the exact, you know, situation in real time, it comes maybe just before or just after there were, you know, military or otherwise exercises. So we started to pay attention to all these drills post 9/11 and post 7/7, but maybe the situation is now that because so much light is shed upon these, both in the mainstream and in the alternative media, perhaps that becomes a thing to say, well, there's no way they're going to try and run anything because everybody's been talking about this, saying, hey, watch out, on November 9th, they're going to do this thing. And it would all become so very obvious. But I think the drills still, you know, fulfill, you know, several purposes, multi, you know, level purposes, in that they, you know, acclimate, you know, the feds and again, other private military contractors and the people who are involved in running these, you know, always expensive, overblown operations. it acclimates them to pulling these operations off as if it were real, as if the president wanted to take over the airwaves, as if the military were going to take over your streets, as if, you know, all of these kind of war game exercises. And it acclimates the people, the plebs, the civilians, as they like to call us in the military speak. It acclimates us to seeing the military, you know, directing traffic and doing, you know, basically, you know, kind of public service kind of things for the good public relations kind of scene. And then when you tie in all the numerology, all the space events, Obama spending so much time lately at Denver, and, you know, you got the New World Airport, and you've got all the possible, probable, deep underground military bases, you know, in addition to all the military bases that we know about there. So that's the thing. When you start to tie in all of these things, it's like, oh my, you know, you got to sometimes wonder.
At some point, it's like, how much of this could possibly be a coincidence?
As
it's on the 9th, correct?
Yes.
And everybody's been talking about this date because it's
for a 9/11. Long time. And yeah. and the press release that I was reading a little bit ago from February goes on to say, while the exact date hasn't been set, you know, it's stipulated that they have to give, you know, at least a 2-month notice. So I believe the update came in June of this year, where they announced it was going to be November 9th. And then we started to see all of the tie-ins with other, you know, military exercises and war games and drills, and then all of the space events with Nibiru or Planet X or Comet Elenin, or all the CMEs and solar flares that we've been seeing bringing, you know, the auroras into the states, that there's so many things going on. This is something I know that Shep at the Intel Hub has been following quite a bit, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And we actually did a great Halloween show where we talked about one of these solar flares taking down the grid and what people are going to do, how are they going to panic. I kind of called it my true Halloween, if you will. You know, the true horror that, hey, I didn't prepare. Oh, no, what's happening here? The grid just went down, and all of a sudden you hear this in your ears. Oh, man. That sound right there is from the emergency broadcasting system. If this was an emergency, you would probably not be hearing it on the Bob Tuscan show.
See, now, and that's an interesting thing that, of course, you know, all the mainstream TV and radio outlets are going to be involved in this. But fortunately, you know, I can't imagine any of the alternative media outlets are going to be doing this. Well, unless they've got the AM/FM affiliates and they've got to play ball. But do you know anything about how, you know, alternative...
Well, the micro broadcasters that we broadcast on all around the country...
They're going to have to do it.
I don't think that they're going to be playing this. In fact, I can almost guarantee that they won't be.
But I guess, but it all maybe is depending on whether they are, you know, members of, you know, the emergency kind of alert system. Something fascinating that did happen, and I think I did discuss this back when this story was breaking, or perhaps when they've done other sort of, you know, drills concerning, you know, the broadcast signals. And that ties in, you remember, you know, we've all switched over to digital television. It's like, oh, what are all those other, you know, analog TV waves going to do? I'd like to think, you know, some, you know, entrepreneur, not entrepreneur, but, you know, inspired, you know, ingenious people are working on setting up, you know, pirate alternative media TV broadcasts that maybe we can all start doing sometime soon. But several years back, and I don't have all the stats right here in front of me, but essentially it was always up to the people at the stations to run these what are called, you know, required weekly tests, and they're also required monthly tests. And you've got to fill out some paperwork, and you've got to run the appropriate bit, and you kind of log it in, and you report back to the EBS system saying, yeah, we did our required weekly test. Yes, we did our required monthly test. But so many stations over the last probably decade plus have basically switched over their systems, which takes the power out of their hands, and the switch can be pulled remotely. So basically the feds can take over your radio station without you doing anything and without you being able to do anything about it, because they basically wired it in. You know, it overrides. That's the term I'm looking for. They're going to override you.
Eminent domain of the airwaves.
So I also have a quick clip. You played that horrific noise.
I'm sorry about that. I was hoping it wouldn't be that bad. I found a little clip from the emergency. I was hoping it would be the one, if this was a prop emergency, I was looking for that, but it just turned out to be a pitch, and sorry about that.
Well, tell me if you hear mine.
On November 9th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, your regularly scheduled programming on this and all other networks will be interrupted with a short, nationwide test of the emergency alert system. This will only be a test.
So that has been running on our own local talk station, KXL 101.1 FM here in Portland, Oregon. And I recorded that off of the air to run on my show last week, and I'll include it again, of course, in my upcoming.
He didn't sound very believable when he said this is only a test.
And that one, I think, because it says this station and all other stations, I bet that's just a generic spot they sent out to stations. Because had the station I was listening to recorded it themselves, they would have said, hey, KXL in Portland, we're going to be doing this test. So, but that was just kind of the general generic version.
What do you think voiceover work pays for that kind of thing?
Oh God, I don't know. I mean, I think talented, amazing voiceover people are surely worth it and well paid. I think when you get down to the level of some grunt working in the AV office at the FCC, probably not a whole hell of a lot.
Yeah.
So
James,
these,
I'd like to hear you be the newest voice of the emergency broadcast.
I'd love to do it.
Can we hear you try out for us?
What should I say? What are we saying?
This is an emergency, and if this was an emergency, you probably shouldn't be listening to me. Something like that. I don't know.
Well, let me. We'll work something out. Maybe I'll come up with a better script. Maybe.
Okay.
But the tests again that we're all so used to that play that horrible sound and then say this is only a test. Those are usually 2 minutes or less. But some of the reporting that I found concerning this upcoming, and again, it's a nationwide test. You can find lots of regional reports. You can see Indiana talking about how they're going to be involved in this emergency alert system and other states. And within one of those, and again, it's just kind of within my related notes and sources here, one of them notes that, these tests are usually 2 minutes when they're done by the states, but this federal one is going to be about 3.5 minutes. So then I instantly see it's like, oh, there's 330. So, yeah, this test running on 11/9 is probably going to run for 3 minutes and 30 seconds.
This numerology stuff, I got to tell you, I don't know if there's necessarily anything to it, but it keeps coming up again and again and again. Can you hear that plane, by the way? I got to shut my window.
I can.
Sorry, guys.
This is one of those great, it's live radio shows. I love it.
Well, anyways, it's an interesting thing to see what they're going to do with this all. And that extra minute and 30 seconds, any guess as to how they're going to make use of that?
I am not sure. So the interesting thing for me, and I guess it it remains to be seen whether it will be a blessing or a curse, but I'm actually going out of town all next week, and I'm essentially going to be off the grid and pretty much won't have cell service and won't have internet. So the very moment they're running this drill, I'm not going to be connected to the grid. So again, for better or worse, I'm not actually going to hear it when it goes down live. That is, unless I can, and I'm working on this kind of behind the scenes, where I'm going to go, I'm contacting a radio station there saying, hey, I'm a radio guy and I'm going to be in town, and would you mind if I came in and basically watched while there was this, emergency alert system going? So hopefully, if even though I'm off the grid, I can hopefully collect up some on the scene recordings and reportings and have that when I get back at the end of next week on 11/11/11.
And there's another one of those days.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yesterday was the first, so that's another one of those.
And that's that's the thing. You tie in then all the other sort of satanic, events, the pagan calendars and all of those things. So yeah, yesterday's the Day of the Dead or All Souls Day or All Saints Day.
Yep. It's and of course the 31st is Halloween, which is a very significant day for the occult in a sense.
Well, and not only the occult, but of course the mainstream religions who have always sort of either manipulated for their own needs or, you know, infiltrated and been part and parcel of. So I think a lot of the origins, and I do have some of this posted in the kingdom, and we can get to it in a little bit if you want. Concern, you know, the druidic traditions and the connections to the Catholic Church and things like that. But I don't want to leave the drill just yet, because there's a couple other things I did want to kind of tie into this, because I know, as I said, Shepard Ambellus from theintelhub.com has been covering this story. One that I have linked up is drills, and even more drills coming up on 11/9, which again, you can even break that down and say Elenin, Comet Elenin. So the confluence of drills on 11/9 that I know, as you start to go through, it's like, oh, this isn't just things going on in the States. There's all sorts of other, you know, kind of international exercises going on. But he has another article that I posted to cyberspacewar.com on the brink of Bluebeam. And I add the question, is a War of the Worlds style hoax imminent? So how much do you get into, have you looked into any of the sort of Project Bluebeam, War of the Worlds style events?
Well, I'm open to it. I've looked into it. The War of the Worlds, is that what it was called? War of the Worlds?
Yeah.
That famous broadcast was definitely a psyop. There's no doubt about it.
Well, because it's, you know, and it's based on, you know, it's based on the book by H.G. Wells, who is, you know, connected to the elites and the, you know, eugenics-obsessed elites. And we all know him and love him for, you know, The Time Machine and War of the Worlds, but he also wrote nonfiction books called The Open Conspiracy and The New World Order, and said, you know, tons of people, you know, will die trying to fight the New World Order, but, you know, they'll never win.
Yeah, so there's that connection, and I just think it's eerily similar to the experiment, perhaps, that they might play on us on the 9th.
That's the thing. So the anniversary of the War of the Worlds broadcast, the 73rd anniversary, was Sunday night. Orson Welles did it on October 30th, 1938. So one, he did it the day before Halloween, so because perhaps if it were on Halloween, it would have been so kind of obvious, you know, a stunt or a show. And that actually reminds me, the BBC had a piece this past week, and it concerns some author's new book. Of course, there's never any, like, just a news story where, you know, someone investigated. It's like, because it's a new book and this guy's shilling it. But it's all about the sort of over-reported stories in America and kind of overblown. And and I have not gone through it at this point, but it makes the case that the War of the Worlds event has become more legendary and overblown.
I thought it was the contrary. From what I understand, and I don't know too much about it, I was always interested in this growing up with my love for radio. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things that radio nerds like yourself and myself looked at and kind of were like, cool, you know, it's one of those bits of history that's fascinating. But I thought that I had heard something that they didn't really tell us the full extent of the reaction, that people really did freak out. And that because of them gauging this reaction, they've made some changes in how they're going to handle disclosure or other false flags, if you will.
And this, you know, has been called, you know, the panic, you know, it was the panic broadcast. And there are other stories of, you know, and I don't think any of the suicides or any of that actually, you know, bared out for reality. But even if it wasn't people running down the street screaming, pulling their hairs out, saying, you know, the aliens are here, it's the psychological effect. So there is a book, and the title escapes me, but it concerns basically the Princeton and their connections to, was this actually a planned event by the elites? And not just a, hey, wow, this crazy kid Orson Welles did this thing that was really effective, let's look at it, that they sort of planned it and perhaps planted the idea with Orson Welles and the Mercury Theater and all of that.
I don't know that part of it is really that important. Because at the end of the day, like you said, they can take these genuine events and learn from them regardless.
That's, yeah, what the saying is, you know, the real action is in the reaction. So, this piece that Shepard wrote on the brink of Bluebeam concerns also the geoengineering. And I've posted a lot of things in the past on Media Monarchy about this that pretty much kind of, you know, lays it all out and says all of the experimentation and all of the technology and all of the pieces are there for them to pull off a staged event, alien event, Jesus comes back event, you know, whichever, you know, maybe the most, you know, politically or culturally expedient or necessary at the moment. But seeding the skies with, you know, the barium and the strontium and all of that.
Think about it like this. Their sky is a canvas.
Exactly.
And it needs a screen to project
some
of these images on, perhaps. And what better screen than these nano-sized particles of barium and strontium that spread out and create the perfect picture for you. Why would they be spraying it on a regular basis, though, is the question that comes to mind.
That's, you know, and then
their
that's
only purpose.
And that sends us, you know, into, or at least, you know, here and now, right, you know, with speculation that, you know, well, maybe it's for multiple purposes. Maybe they are setting it because it does create the screen in the sky, basically, you know, the gigantic plasma screen so that they can project Jesus or the Mahdi or aliens or whatever up on the sky for everybody to see, essentially. Or does it, and, you know, one of the other reasons, are they also doing it for, you know, for global warming? They say, you know, we're geoengineering the atmosphere. But when you tie in, so you've got the technology to make the canvas and the screen in the sky, you've got the technology to beam the sound into your head with the audio spotlights, which they've done with billboards in Times Square. And there was this story about connecting to, basically, you know, people being tortured and waterboarded in the War of Terror. But a story came out, and I think it was from ABC News, and again, I apologize to everybody for mentioning a lot of things that say, you know, oh, I can't remember exactly, but I think like so many things, you know, people have to go research it for themselves. I'll supply as much sources and citing as I can, but I can't be that, you know, comprehensive. But there was a story about basically a CIA torturer who said, yeah, it was funny. The next morning, you know, the guy came back and said, you know, somebody they had been working over came back the next morning and basically said, you know, well, you know, my God appeared to me and said, I should, you know, tell you everything. With the speculation of maybe they sort of, you know, blue beamed this guy and he thought his God appeared to him and told him, you know, submit to the torture and go along with it.
That's that term, blue beam, this guy, it's like right out of a science fiction movie. Maybe the blue beam got him. You know,
With the anniversary of the War of the Worlds broadcast, which we just had on October 30th, I posted to Media Monarchy an amazing sort of remix that a listener sent to me. And I need to update my notes on MediaMonarchy.com. I don't actually, and I think some folks do, I don't want people to think I made this myself. A listener, a guy named Marcus, sent this to me and it's all posted up. But basically, he took the original, you know, hour-long War of the Worlds broadcast and added tons of music and sound effects and Pink Floyd and The Orb and, you know, CBS News reports. And he basically kind of remixed it and mashed it up. And again, very, very timely.
I'm actually silent here because I'm looking it up. I'm going to MediaMonarchy.com. And let's see here. Where is it?
So it's the War of the Worlds, the remix project on the 73rd anniversary of the broadcast.
Here it is. Let's see if I can listen to a quick excerpt here.
The 73rd anniversary of the War of the Worlds. Orson Welles. Here he is. Orson, take it away.
James, you're supposed to be Orson.
Oh. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Cool, dude. I like it. I'm going to have to check that out after the show.
So, I'm a huge Orson Welles fan. I, you know, pretty much all his films, all his radio, every, you know, he was one of those guys
that... He's a Freemason.
That
you know that, right?
Everything he did had amazing art to it. Was he a Freemason?
I don't know.
You know, you
one
never,
of those things that
well
you
and you never really up. Want to find out that you know the artists that you do really admire like oh crap he was one of those right? But I think a lot of them, you know, we can tie in Stanley Kubrick, especially if we're talking about, you know, kind of fake space events, because there's all the speculation about him, you know, faking the moon landing for NASA. And even if that's bunk, he did actually shoot material for NASA in case the Apollo missions failed. And Stanley Kubrick always seems like someone who, in all of his films, he sort of seems like he had seen the inside and he was actually trying to kind of warn us about it or tell us about it in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, a lot of people feel that way about Stanley Kubrick's work. It's interesting. I don't know too much about his films, to be honest. I'm kind of, I'm kind of behind the curve with films. I spent so much of my time researching, I kind of lost all the pop culture film stuff. And that's why I like having you on, because you know about
thing.
How they put this right in front of our face.
And that's always kind of been my first love, if you will, has always kind of been media. Yeah. So my, you know, the funny story is I had kind of a conservative Christian upbringing. I wasn't really allowed to buy music or go to movies. But once that wall kind of crumbled in, you know, 1988, when I was 11 years old, once I was allowed to go to the movies and buy music, it was, you know, it was off to the races and down the rabbit hole.
That's how I felt when I found talk radio. My parents took away my TV when I was younger. Okay, I grew up in the generation where we had TVs. The kids actually had their own TV, which is so ridiculous. Don't get me started on that.
I had one.
Yeah. So anyways, they took away my TV and I found talk radio. You know, because it stimulated me, and I loved the call in interaction, and you know, I found Coast to Coast very young, at like 10 years old, and I would listen to these people call in. The other night, James, we had this caller call in, and he's a pretty cool caller. I've heard him call up before the show. You get to know some of these callers, you know. It's just, anyways, he calls in and he says, "Hey Bob, right now I'm in New York and I'm looking up in the sky, and it's totally red." Totally red. I don't know what the heck's happening. I wish you could see this right now. And I said, yeah. Put your friend on the phone. What are you smoking? So he puts his friend on the phone. He says, yeah, Bob, I'm telling you, the sky's red. It's the most, it's the craziest thing I've ever seen. So I said, all right. You know, I keep an open mind. Less than an hour later, I talked to my good friends at the Intel Hub. And they had shown that there was these auroras that could be seen in half of the states. And I know you covered this as well on your website, Cyberspace War.
And that was something, you know, thankfully, is, you know, as I kind of referred to earlier, is, you know, I've got my man Alan in Omaha, who's my main, you know, writer and editor over on cyberspaceboard.com. October 24th, aurora is seen in half of states. And he does link right back to you guys at theintelhub.com. These rare all red auroras sometimes appear during intense geomagnetic storms. And that's, you know, again, kind of what we're seeing all around.
It's pretty crazy to experience this. I mean, if you would have asked me if people would be able to see auroras in the South, in Arkansas, or wherever they were, I'd say you're crazy. That's something for the North Pole. But I don't know that I understand it, to be honest, James. These Earth changes and this kind of thing. It's a little bit over my head, to be honest.
But I'm not a scientist.
Keep open mind and
either.
Learn about it.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, you got to keep an open mind pretty much about everything. But yeah, you know, I'm not a scientist myself. But again, I think we just try and take in a lot of the kind of raw data and information, and hopefully parse it and you know, use our brains to break it down. And like we've kind of talked about from, you know, peacerevolution.org, it's like using those lost tools of education. Use your grammar, logic, and rhetoric. For me, it seems like it could be a number of things. But just as, you know, the old, you know, witch doctors way back, they knew how the skies worked, so they could say, hey, you know, if you guys don't, you know, play ball, I'm going to make the moon go away, or, you know, I won't let the moon come back.
Yeah,
so they're able to kind of exploit.
Mechanism.
Exactly. So they can exploit. So if they were able to do it thousands of years ago, think about on the multiple levels, you know, that it can be pulled off now. And when you tie in all the Occupy stuff and the general strikes, and you tie in the massive, you know, winter storms that have already, you know, beat up the East Coast before Halloween, which is rare. And then you see those weird earthquakes they had on the East Coast, you know, a couple of months ago, and the hurricanes and all of those things. It seems like the East Coast has been getting it more than the West Coast. But on all, I don't know, it just seems like on so many multiple levels, there's just, it's, everything just kind of keeps escalating and we're kind of teetering.
Mm-hmm. Definitely some interesting times to be alive in.
It is, you know, and like I said, I had a conservative Christian upbringing, so that, you know, that background and those connections, and even those folks, you know, still say, it's like, well, you know, it's all in the Lord's hands.
Revelations.
Yeah. And that's, I think, for me, you know, one of the, you know, disappointing things that you don't see, you know, churches coming out more against all these things that go on in the world. You'll see them tacitly go along with all of it with Bush because he supposedly is aligned with their conservative yada yada. But then when Obama comes in, oh, God, you know, we've got to take our country back and he's going to ruin this country. And it's the crappy, you know, it's the ridiculous partisan politics that with the short attention span, people can't remember that the previous puppet from 4 years ago is no different than the current puppet and that they just carry on the agenda and pass off the nuclear football, literally, in the suitcase. So it's all those kind of things, you know, that you find really frustrating that, you know, everybody in all their little boxes. But it's hard, you know, how do you argue against, well, it's all in the Lord's hands. Like, okay.
Jeez. Speaking of the nuclear situation real quick, things are heating up with Israel and Iran. Israel talked about preemptive strikes of the Iranians' nuclear facilities. And, well, folks, watch out for those crazy Zionists with nukes. I tell you what, if you're afraid of Iran having nukes, well, please, if Israel, the country that has nukes and is looking, there was another story I posted on our website, to have even more capabilities. So not only can nobody else even have nuclear power, but they want as many capabilities to blow up that region as possible. Okay.
And that's why, you know, I think it's why you mention it with the segue, because that's all connected to the church. It's all, you know, it's that suicide pact, because God said, yeah, they're, you know, the chosen people, then we have to be connected to them and da da da, because we're going to make this thing happen. Because this book,
exactly,
that we say, you know, oh, well, it's, a, you know, at least this King's version of it that we read, that doesn't include the weird books that have stuff about giants and aliens and all that stuff. We had to cut that crap out of there. You look at all that and go, oh, well, it's all, you know, prophesied to be, so we're going to work towards making that happen. If it's God's will and it's all meant to be, what difference does it make what I do? And it's all going to go along down that path. That was, you know, was my question as a little kid.
I hate that attitude, because it's so, and that's why I'm an activist, because I feel the opposite of, you know, saying, oh, just, you know, worry about the afterlife and blah, 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 and just accept the God, because that is what they want, mm-hmm, whoever they may be. They want you to be complacent, or what's the right word here? And that they want you to be just, you know, okay with it and accepting and apathetic. And that's feeding into them. The powers that shouldn't be have used the religion for many, many years, mm-hmm, as a tool to manipulate the masses. First was religion. And then they realized they could use that for political means, okay? Mm-hmm. And then even before religion was the politicians that were able to manipulate people through these spooky things that they understood, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of turned into a whole religious-based, and then later, again, political-based, as I mentioned. And speaking of religion and the church and all these things, while we're on this tangent, mm-hmm, since we've talked last month, the Vatican has come out with some interesting stories.
Oh.
And I'm going to have Santos Bonacci on tomorrow and then Greg Zizmansky next week, both who are very much interested in chatting about the Vatican. I'll let you take some of those stories. I'm sure you had heard about their call for a World Bank.
their call for, yeah, a world financial institution, which, you know, most even mainstream media outlets said, which really mirrored a lot of the points of the Occupy movements, which is like, oh, wow, what a coincidence. So funny that the organized religion and this organized protest are arguing for the same thing. What are the odds of that? I think with all of that, we've seen a bunch of moves with the Catholic Church where they're saying it's okay to believe in aliens. I'd baptize an alien if they were real. We've set up our Lucifer telescope in Arizona to look for aliens. All of that stuff. And now we see all the moves on the Zionism front. And we see that UNESCO has granted Palestine membership. And now we see Israel, you know, racing forward with settlements in the sort of reaction to this. But when you, it's like, oh yeah, you know, one, you say, yeah, you know, Palestinians should have a vote and a state in all of these, you know, grand chessboard situations. But then you see it's UNESCO, and it's like, oh, but that's Julian Huxley and the elites and the eugenics. I'm trying to think of what the appropriate analogy would be to that of, you know, the U.S. won't fund UNESCO if they add Palestine, but it's all of the, you know, it's these elite connected organizations and outlets, you know, playing ends, you know, playing both ends against the middle or any kind of situation.
Yeah, here's another story from the Vatican. Occupy the Vatican, an interesting movement that has arose from all these Occupy movements. Anyways, this group in Vancouver, I'm sure Reverend Kevin Annette is involved, if it's in Vancouver and it has to do with the Vatican, who's been on the show. Do you know Kevin, by the way?
I do not.
You got to check out his stuff. He has Hidden from History. He talks about the genocide of the Aborigines that the Catholic Church was very much involved with in Canada. But anyways, they've served eviction notices against the child-raping church, as the Canadian media distorts the event. Interesting story here at theintelhub.com. You see these activists going to the Vancouver branch of the Catholic Church demanding justice. There's so many things that we could occupy here. You know, since they've played this game, occupy this, occupy yourself, an article, by the way, we posted early on. Occupy the skies, you know, take the chemtrails out, occupy whatever.
Well, and there's a lot of moves on occupying, you know, Bank of America, and there were zombies that were arrested at Bank of America, and, you know, similar situations.
Let them close down their account.
We had everyone's favorite Michael Moore was in Portland here just a couple days ago, who came to kind of rally the troops and say, Portland, Michael Moore was in Portland, Oregon. His handler, Ari Emanuel, let him come here to Portland and tell us.
Is Ari Emanuel his handler?
Ari Emanuel's his agent.
Ah,
so that's the question for me. It's like, do you think Michael Moore, with high power, you know, one of the most high-powered Hollywood agents, which is portrayed by Jeremy Piven and Entourage.
Entourage, yeah.
But it's, Ari Emanuel, it's Rahm Emanuel's brother. They're both the sons of Irgun terrorist, and one's the mayor of Chicagoland now, and the other's, you know, one of the most high-powered Hollywood agents. Do you really think he would let his client go on TV and, you know, do something that was really going to shock the system and bring down this system? He's playing a part. Yeah, I think he did actually admit that, you know, oh, Michael, you know, well, I am part of the 1%, which of course he is. But we had I mentioned the Bank of America, those kind of Occupy situations. And the situation here in Portland, as I think it's happening in a lot of cities, all the street people, all the people who should get medical and mental evaluations, and all the other street people who need to be taken care of, they're of course all gravitating towards the Occupy camps, because it's, you know, at least more collective of people. And there have been arrests in Portland where they're going into these camps, which are legal, and, you know, our city and Mayor Sam Adams and everybody has pretty much been like, okay, these two, you know, encampments are fine, people can stay at these two. And it's been a pretty, so far, chill situation as far as any kind of bad crap. But they've had to go in and arrest, you know, oh, there was this guy, you know, who's, you know, exposing himself, and oh, this other dude, oh, he's a registered sex offender, oh, this other guy was being combative. And so that kind of element is starting to filter in, unfortunately.
in New York, James, I read a story where the cooks were on strike or were going to go on strike. And you want to know why? This is kind of funny. They finally got pissed off that all the homeless people were eating all of their organic goodies. In New York, the Occupy protests have been catered with organic brown rice and organic veggies, fajitas. And I mean, I was looking at the menu. I was quite impressed.
Huh. So
they don't mess around.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to finish in saying that it's interesting because, like you were saying, all the street people tend to gravitate towards that. And I was like, wow, it's what a contradiction here. Let's feed ourselves all the good stuff. And you know half these people are the first ones to say, how dare you mistreat the homeless? How dare you do all this? But no, don't eat our own food. Don't eat our own organic food. That's the double standard that I saw in it.
So, and we're now mentioning food, so I do want to segue to
and
blast through some of the other stuff that we have. But I just want to, just as long as we're mentioning Occupy and now that we've brought up some of these points, maybe that's kind of the question. Is this, and again, it comes from foundations. It came from, you know, the Ford Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation funded left gatekeeper media outlets, how kind of all of this began. That was the seed. Then, of course, it's the copycat effect, and everybody will kind of pile on the bandwagon, whether that's, yay, I want this team to win the Super Bowl, or yay, I want this guy to win the election. It's, yay, I want these people to do this thing. That's what they're paying attention to now, and you can, it's, you know, it's, again, frustrating to see. And, you know, your coworkers and folks who, because it's the topic of conversation, they seem like they're interested in it. But
it
as
was
soon
on
as,
the Daily Show.
Yeah, as soon as the next thing comes along, they're not going to be thinking about it at all. But is something, as you know, part of all of this, is it just going to be even more class warfare among ourselves? So when you're talking about, you know, cooks and homeless people, and then we have street kids and other, you know, people who basically, yeah, they've been foreclosed upon, they were illegally kicked out of their homes, they lost their job because, you know, the oligarchs sent their jobs overseas because it's all a part of this plan. But is it going to come down to kind of a class warfare situation where, imagine, you know, maybe, I'm speculating here, folks like you and I, if we found ourselves in this situation to go, well, I'm certainly not a, you know, multi-millionaire or the 1 or 2%, but I'm not a homeless guy on the street, and I feel like, you know, thank whomever, you know, and knock on wood, I'm so thankful that I am healthy and my legs work and I can have a job and I can work. So I do those things because I want to live in an apartment and I like to have hot water and some power. And so I choose to work jobs. So could we find ourselves basically in the middle of saying, you know, of course, no, I'm not the 1%, I'm not a bankster, but I'm also not you on the street who's griping about this and that, even though you could walk in and get some crappy job. No, working for McDonald's isn't ideal, but it sure as hell beats freezing your ass off on the street.
Yeah, James, we are the 99%.
And okay? Isn't, again, the numerology, the 99%. You've got the Herman Cain 999 plan. It's all around there. But let me blast through some of my other related updates here, as I think we're kind of down to our last less than 10 minutes.
Well, we're commercial-free, though, James, so if we go a little long, that's okay.
Okay. But if we...
foodworldorder.com, follow this link here, folks. California rep Spire takes food stamp challenge. Let's see how he does.
And she's not the only one. And actually, and this is Representative Jackie. I'm not sure if it's Spire or Spear. S-P-E-I-E-R. She has also done a lot of work trying to bring light to the epidemic of rape in the military. And seems, you know, one of those, you know, handful of good public representatives who are trying to represent their constituents and fight for things, you know, to help people in their district.
Isn't the military's policy on rape, don't ask, don't tell?
Oh, jeez.
That was a really bad joke.
That's bad. I'm going to sidestep it. California Representative Spear takes food stamp challenge. Lawmaker and other faith leaders try living on $4.50 a day, like 1 in 7 Americans. A total food budget of $4.50 a day might be tough to swallow, but Congresswoman Jackie Spear out of California plans to try. Starting this past Monday, the Peninsula Democrat began a five-day challenge to live on a food stamp budget. Our own governor did this a couple of years ago. Governor Kulongoski of Oregon took the food stamp challenge and, you know, again, made kind of jokes about, it's like, oh, well, it'll be like college, you know, it'll be lots of ramen. But that, again, ties into, you know, the mass amount of food stamp roll, you know, the dole that has increased, you know, massively over these past few years. And again, that gets us more into the situation of having people dependent on the system that has intentionally kept them at a certain, you know, situation.
Yeah, it's very interesting to see these people practice what they preach, in a sense, or live off of it. I'm sure they don't actually think that you can live off of this. And the fact of the matter is, it's unhealthy. It really is unhealthy to not spend more money on food. Although you can do it, but
you can do it. But that's the thing. And again, you know, I work in a grocery store here in Portland, and all the WIC stuff, the Women, Infant, Children program. It's all the worst stuff. It's all the Gerber Wonder Bread crap. So again, that's kind of the game, that we're going to keep you in this spot where you're going to consume garbage, whether that's media garbage or food garbage or any kind of garbage, that again is going to keep you at the subservient level to where you're going to keep coming to us to beg to be taken care of.
Oh yeah, some of the worst of that garbage is that high fructose corn syrup and aspartame that they're putting in cans. And James, you wanted to get to this other story at thefoodworldorder.com. Soda consumption linked to teen violence study finds. Interesting.
And that's from Natural News. And there's a study from Injury Prevention, and I think it's the British Medical Journal. New study found that teenagers who consume high amounts of sugary soda appear to be more prone towards violence than teenagers who consume less or no sugary soda. And then that just takes us through, and it'll all segue quite nicely here. I posted up a couple of things also related to Halloween, which, of course, Halloween means candy. There's an interesting program where dentists buy back Halloween candy to send to troops overseas, which I don't know. There was something I found kind of bizarre about that, which, of course, they deserve candy and treats and, you know, and care packages from home while they, you know, fight as the policy enforcement arm of the families that be. And, of course, war is based on lies. But, again, so many of the folks are well-meaning and want to do well. And, again, regardless of your take on the wars or all these situations, you see that they're treated like garbage when they get home anyway. So that should bring up questions as to, you know, military service in the first place. But I guess I just found it interesting. Like, don't give your kids the candy. Let's send it all to our soldiers so they can have caramel color and red number 5 and yellow 48.
Give them all high fructose corn syrup and food coloring. And
so the counter to that story that I posted along with it is, you know, if, you know, get taking away your kids' candy and sending it to the military. From the New York Daily News, but it's out of South Carolina and it originates from the Augusta Chronicle. 10-year-old draws a pistol to protect his Halloween candy. A 10-year-old trick-or-treater in South Carolina allegedly pulled a pistol on a woman who joked about stealing his sack of candy. It was basically, you know, it's like, oh, you got a lot of candy. I'm going to take your goodies, young man. Kidding around. And he pulled out a 9mm and said, no, you're not. So it turns out his brother, 10 years old, also had a gun. The boy who pulled the gun was taken to a local police station before being turned over to his parents, the Chronicle said. Lieutenant David Turner told the newspapers that the boy swiped the guns from their grandfather. And one, I believe it's the Augusta Chronicle, notes that it's like they had the guns without permission, which again is funny to say. It's like, so what if they said, no, Grandpa said it's okay, I could bring a gun out to
It's the right to bear arms, even for 11-year-olds. I mean, I was shooting guns as a kid, but I had a lot of respect for them, and they were kept in a safe, and it was very, we were very safe about it. One last thing about Halloween candy, James. I saw a story that showed that dentists were suggesting parents allow their children to gorge on all these nasty high fructose corn syrup filled pieces of trash. They were saying, oh yeah, let them, for Halloween, let them do it. Because I guess they were thinking, well, that gets it out of their system.
Yeah, so. And you know, and I'm sure, you know, and again, I am not a parent, but maybe it's one of the, you know, you got to pick your battles. So maybe it's easier to go, yeah, have some junk on Halloween because you ain't getting it any other time of the year. But exactly. The other thing could just be, it's like, yeah, because all those guys are all on the, you know, you know, ADA and Oral-B and the, you know, the dental industrial complex. Like, yeah, they're all on the payroll and all get all kinds of booty and hookup from those industries. And it's not very different from all the medical industries and all of those things. So you could be sinister and say, well, maybe it's in their interest to say, yeah, eat a bunch of crappy, you know, candy, because that'll keep you coming to me again for more help. Will intentionally set up crappy systems so that when you consume that crap and it makes you ill, you're going to come to us and say, hey, that crap you fed us made us sick. Can you make me better?
Yeah. Hershey's making a new chocolate. It's milk chocolate with fluoride.
Seriously?
No.
No. I was like, oh, damn, I have to post that to Food World Order.
That's a great story, yeah.
That's the thing. So everything has gotten so ridiculous, and we, I think you and I have done that to each other a couple times as we've been here on the air going, hey, did you hear da-da-da? And the other's like, really? It's like, no, that's not true. But then the other, and then the next time, it's like, hey, did you hear da-da-da? Really? Is that true? Yeah, it actually
yeah,
is true.
Yeah, that one is, yeah.
So we're, you know, talking trick-or-treat on Food World Order. We can blast quickly through. I have some things on holyhexes.com related to just, you know, kind of the occult history and connections of Halloween and Samhain and the Day of the Dead and All Saints Day and all of those things and the Druid origins and the role of the Catholic Church. All of that brings us to what I'm most excited about over the last couple of days is my latest mixtape from Media Monarchy. Nice. Folks may know I have a college radio background, and again, as I said earlier in this show, I've always been a music and film fan from the, you know, the moment I was able to do it. I even remember actually playing records for my G.I. Joe guys. Like, I would sort of already, like, I was kind of making a soundtrack for this battle scene. But I digress. I posted mixtape 13 to MediaMonarchy.com for Halloween, and it's basically a massive two-hour show that I worked on for quite some time, and I love using an audio, you know, editor that's a multi-tracker, which basically you can start to lay out and overlay and, you know, add in and remix and make, you know, transitions and all of those things, which is always what I've loved to do in media. And you know, the weekly episode of Media Monarchy is, you know, the smaller, less showy version of that. But I love to, you know, take clips, take music, take samples, and put it all, you know, into a different context. But this mixtape is 2 hours, and it's not the sort of like, oh, scary Halloween with, you know, it's like, yeah, you could just play some Misfits songs and call it a night. But I tried to be maybe a little more subtle with it. But it gets into, you know, space events and killers and possessed cars and graveyards and all sorts of things. Spiritualized, Talking Heads, Henry Mancini, Modest Mouse, Broadcast, Nat King Cole, Bing Crosby, you know, all the bands that you typically listen to. That's, I think, actually what makes it a great mix, is that you can hear Bing Crosby and the Andrews Sisters and then hear the Talking Heads and Spiritualized.
I have no idea who any of those people are.
Bing None. Crosby? None of them?
Yeah, I told you, James. Okay. I'm not very hip.
Well, I never want to be the kind of guy that's like, what? You've never heard of that?
It's okay. Feel free. I'm a total imbecile when it comes to this stuff. I mean, it happens to me all the time. So I'm just accepting of the fact that I'm just behind the curve.
Well, I, you know, and I'll provide the links in the show notes for these, which, as you said, I like to take these appearances that I do monthly on your show and put them up on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/MediaMonarchy. Mm-hmm.
And he does that commercial free, by the way, which is cool, and it consolidates it all.
And
I appreciate
of course,
the work you put into that, James. Thank you for that, man.
I love doing it. And it was only, you know, I think after we did the very first one, I think when you were still originally called, you know, the Intel Hub radio show, that after that very first one, I was like, oh, sweet. You know, I like doing this because this sort of gives me a monthly, you know, kind of video project. Because I don't, you know, I don't have the hardware to make better, you know, kind of from scratch videos. So again, this kind of format and opportunity you give me is fantastic. So I'd love to, you know, beg and plead with folks out there to go check out this mixtape 13 for Halloween, which again, I think it's kind of shows, it's kind of what I'm good at as far as picking and remixing music for folks. But that was published just a mere 2 days after last week's episode 237 of the Media Monarchy podcast was the 5th anniversary of the show, that I've been doing here in Portland, Oregon from the very beginning on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. So yeah, I can't believe, you know, that I've done it for 5 years at PRA.
Congratulations, that's great, man. Stay at it, please. We need people like you on the air.
And, you know, as it all kind of slowly, organically kind of grows, as I'm essentially a one-man band, there's so many things, you know, that I'd love to be working on all the time. Constantly thinking of, you know, what are the most efficient ways to do all these things, which, again, I think requires getting more people involved and kind of posting news and stories and writing for all the websites. And then that would kind of let me then do more video and do more audio and, you know, do more those other kind of things that I, you know, I love collaborating with James Corbett. I love collaborating with you, Bob. And, you know, it's just trying to grow all of that out. Because I think...
Even when I misbehave.
Even when you misbehave and press the wrong button.
I mean, like tonight. But it was cool because we got to do a commercial-free format, which is... it's just a little bit more relaxing for me. I hate to say it.
Well, and I appreciate it. And actually, to tie in one more plug, I'm about to shoot the 90th episode of New World next week with James here in just a few minutes, so I have to switch Skype channels here.
All right, very cool. Say hello to James for us, and he wakes up early in the morning.
He does, man. He's, you know, folks that I, you know, I'm in contact with and kind of right. know, he's about the hardest working guy in alternative independent media that I know.
Well, it shows. It really does. Mm-hmm. He puts together such great podcasts. He's working with Boiling Frogs and Sybil mm-hmm. Edmonds now, doing some good work mm-hmm. there, and it really shows. And guys like me are slackers. I mean, I got to tell you. I look to him. Go ahead.
No, that's what I was going to say, and you and I have joked about it before. It's like, you know, they say you should surround yourself with people smarter than you, and that's, I've constantly with folks like James Corbett. It's like, oh, damn, you know, he makes me want to do better work.
Yeah, well, that's what it's all about. The more people out there just doing something, the better, okay? And you don't have to be as good as James is or as even hard of a worker as he is. Trust me, I get by with very little, so.
All right, man, I think we've been doing these since April of this year. So,
yeah,
again, I
was looking on YouTube the other day, and there's quite a bit of videos out there of us. It's like, geez.
Awesome. Awesome.
So cool, yeah. We'll keep at it. We'll see you next month. Thanks for riding along with us tonight on the show. It's always a pleasure, James.
Pleasure's all, my man. I appreciate it. And again, maybe folks keep an eye on MediaMonarchy.com in the coming week to see, you know, my updates and related things concerning this, you know, 11/9 emergency broadcast drill.
Yeah, it should be interesting to see how that pans out or plays out. Listen, James, should I play a little bit of your mixtape here while I take a little break for some water? Would that be okay?
That'd be fine.
Let's listen to just the beginning here, and then I'll be back in a second with another guest. We may open up the phone lines and so much more. James, thanks again, and they can find this at MediaMonarchy.com, right?
That's right, and I will add an extra kind of flag at the top of the page that will point folks to, you know, to not miss the latest mixtape.
Very cool, James. Take care, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
All right, man. Thanks a lot.